It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station, broadcasting from atop Signal Hill, overlooking downtown Kodiak, where it's 35 degrees right now. We're looking for a 30% chance of snow showers, then cloudy skies with a high near 36 today. Mostly clear skies tonight, with a low around 28 and west wind to 15 miles per hour. So that might be a chance to see some meteors, maybe some northern lights tonight. For tomorrow, slight chance of snow between noon and 3 p.m., then a chance of rain, increasing clouds at a high near 37. So kind of the weather we've been getting. Coming up on the Midday News, Kodiak Bookstore adapts to COVID by going online. Teachers across the country are looking at our political situation as a teaching moment for civics. And a new antibody treatment will become available in Bethel soon. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. President-elect Joe Biden is campaigning on behalf of two Democrats running in next month's Senate runoff elections in Georgia today. Speaking at a drive-in rally in Atlanta, former gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams urged voters not to lose the momentum.
Last time I talked to you, I said we needed to make a plan to vote. Well, we need to do it again. The last time we talked, I said we need to send in our mail-in ballots, return them in your drop boxes or in your mailboxes, but we need to do it again.
Democrats John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock are facing tough challenges from Republican incumbents Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue. The outcome of the races will determine whether Republicans maintain control of the Senate. President-elect Biden has tapped a one-time primary rival, former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, to lead the Department of Transportation. An Afghanistan war veteran, Buttigieg would be the first openly gay person nominated for a permanent cabinet-level post. The Federal Reserve is teaming up with international counterparts to help assess the financial risks associated with climate change. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the central bank has formally joined a network for greening the financial system.
The Fed has already been working informally with the network for over a year as central banks and bank regulators around the world look for ways to account for climate change. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell says he looks forward to deepening those discussions now that the Fed has officially joined the network. While other agencies have larger roles to play in setting climate policy, the Fed is charged with ensuring the stability of the financial system. A changing climate is one of many risks that could affect that. Last week, a group of House Republicans warned the Fed to proceed cautiously in this area. The GOP lawmakers argue that assessing climate risk is challenging, and they worry it could jeopardize bank financing for fossil fuel industries. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Congressional leaders are scheduled to meet at this hour in an attempt to reach an agreement on the next coronavirus relief bill. Speaking on the Senate floor earlier today, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said lawmakers will not break for the holidays until they can resolve their differences.
We're not leaving here without a COVID package. It's not going to happen. We're going to stay here until we get a COVID package, no matter how long. It takes.
McConnell and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi have been discussing the possibility of attaching a bipartisan relief measure to a larger spending bill that will keep the government funded through next year. But lawmakers remain deadlocked on two major issues, including additional aid for state and local governments. At last check on Wall Street, the Dow was trading higher, up 338 points. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Businesses all over Kodiak have been hard at work innovating a new vision of local commerce in a post-COVID world. stellar example of this trend is the local Islander Bookshop, which has shifted the entirety of its catalog online.
The process has taken much longer than I thought it would take. Part of the issue is that I use one point of sale system in the shop, and then the website for that point of sale system isn't very user friendly. So I decided to go with Shopify, which has a lot more features that make it easier for customers. And learning how to connect the two has been interesting and challenging, but I think we're finally there. And in trying to upload our, update our inventory with thousands of books and different titles.
Melissa Halfman, owner of the Island Bookshop, has been hard at work putting the shop online. She says that while it's not a complete replacement for regular in-person sales in a holiday season, it has mitigated some of the pandemic's impact.
Kodiak's come out in support of small business. Because we're operating on limited capacity or appointment only, and the town really does support small business, as far as what I've seen. And I know we were going to take a hit, by decreasing traffic with appointment-only shopping, but the orders are starting to come in online. It's nowhere near what it would be without a pandemic, but we're making it work.
Halfman also takes a small pleasure from the connectedness online shopping brings.
But what I really like is that there's this chat feature. I installed this little chat box on the website, and folks are sending me messages on there, and I can respond to them. And it's just, so far, all the conversations are so sweet, and it really helps as we're all just kind of living in our homes and in our tiny bubbles. It's nice to talk with different people. A lady shared today that her son's really into dinosaurs, and he's looking for pop-up books, so I'll research some of those and get back to her.
Halfman says the change will likely be a permanent fixture. Those interested in learning more about the Islander's change or merely to pick up a good book for the holiday season can do so at islanderbookshop.com. Electors across the country met on Monday to cast the official electoral votes for the president. It's an important part of the election process that normally doesn't receive much attention, especially from students across the state. Alaska Public Media's Mayona Aina spoke with teachers in Alaska about how they're helping students understand this year's unusual election cycle.
Here's a little history about the Electoral College.
A lot of people say, we should get rid of the Electoral College. It's antiquated. It's out of date. Had it not been for the Electoral College, I don't think you'd have seen this thing ratified.
That's Perry Lewis, a social studies teacher at Eagle River High School in Anchorage. He's explaining to his class, over Zoom of course, how the Electoral College came to be. And in a year where the current president has refused to accept the election results, it's a rare opportunity for students to watch in real time how a centuries-old institution that was hotly debated at its creation continues to function. Lewis says his students are paying attention.
I spent quite a bit of time talking about the Electoral College system and how that works, primarily because that's become fairly politicized.
Lewis says with students at home and so much news coverage, it's kind of impossible for students to escape national politics. And Lewis says his students are eager to know as much as possible.
It's not like the 80s when I grew up in the late 70s where occasionally, Mr. Carter or Mr. Reagan might bust in on my Sesame Street and interrupt my life. Now it's so encompassing to every angle of our lives. So to me, that was a bit of an eye-opener, that kids really were kind of craving an understanding of these things.
Amy Galloway noticed a renewed interest in all things electoral in her classes as well. Galloway teaches government at West Valley High School in Fairbanks.
In my 22 years of teaching civics, I can honestly say I've never had to deal with the fear that the transfer of power would not go peacefully. That is very different this year.
Galloway says she polled her classes on how they felt about the election results, asking if they cared, if they were excited, or if they were scared. This was the first time she included a scared category.
But I had at least 25% who were nervous, who were scared. And that's new.
Galloway says she spends a lot of time talking with students about topics like the importance of voting, voter disenfranchisement, and understanding the relationship between citizens and political leaders. She used the interest in this election to talk about power. And she says class discussions really illustrated what she always hopes her students take away from her civics lessons.
Nothing is more important than their job as citizens. Like, they have to control the government, or the government will control them. And one of the ways we do that is with a vote. And so I think what's so powerful about this year's election is I'm not hearing people say, my vote doesn't really matter. Like, I hear that all the time, and I haven't heard that this year. Our representative democracy, it's a participatory sport. You can't watch it. You have to do it.
Galloway says the way her students responded to civics lessons this year made her particularly excited about how they will engage in the future. And Lewis in Anchorage feels the same way. While the election is largely over, these Alaska teachers hope the lessons from this year will have a significant impact in the years to come. In Anchorage, I'm Maiwa Aina.
Chief of Staff Dr. Ellen Hodges says the Bethel Hospital has been administering the antibody treatment for a couple weeks after receiving an allocation from the state.
It's called bamlanivimab. That's the brand name of it, and it's a monoclonal antibody.
The antibodies are manufactured proteins that mimic the body's immune system response to fight off the coronavirus. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration recently authorized the antibody treatment for emergency use. In clinical trials, the treatment reduced hospitalizations and emergency room visits in patients. The antibody is given to people who have tested positive for coronavirus and have a high risk of developing a severe COVID-19 reaction. Recipients cannot be hospitalized or on oxygen and must be over 12 years old. Currently, Dr. Hodges says the outpatient treatment requires monitoring while the procedure is done and is only available at the Bethel Hospital in the region and not at Village Clinics.
Because it's an IV infusion and it has to be given in an area where the personnel can respond to like a bad allergic reaction, because that's one of the side effects of that medication.
Other side effects include nausea, diarrhea, dizziness, headache, itching, and vomiting. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Juneau resident Majid Sateri was killed by a neighbor in his apartment building in November. Since his work for the school district meant he was often on a school bus, his friends, neighbors, and co-workers held a memorial bus ride on Saturday to honor his life. KTOO's Pablo Pena has this report.
Majid Sateri worked for the Juneau School District as a school bus aide, someone who helps bus drivers load and unload kids safely. He was known to his friends, neighbors, and co-workers as Mark. On a cold, icy Saturday afternoon, about half a dozen school buses lined up in front of Juneau Douglas High School. Dressed in winter clothes, masked up, and socially distanced, those who knew him best were there to honor him. Inside the lead bus, Kevin Hansen, one of Sateri's co-workers, directs the driver on the route to each stop as somber music plays on the radio.
He was an amazing man, and I can't stress how great he was to the people that he worked for. The smile on his face is something that is near and dear. So he was a good man.
Mick Lowry knew Sateri for the last 20 years. He says they were like extended family. A neighbor has been charged with murder in connection to Sateri's death, but Lowry says the school bus memorial wasn't about how his friend died.
We're not really involved in an outcome or anything. What we're doing is we're just trying to have a memorial for Mark and show everybody that we cared and appreciated him, and that's what this is all about. It's not anything else.
Lowry says Sateri really loved his job.
They all loved Mark. All the kids always loved Mark. He was just the nicest guy. He always had a big smile on his face.
He was also known as a helpful neighbor.
When he wasn't working and helping out with the school bus, he was driving his neighbors around and helping them do things. And he always just seemed to be there to help people when they needed it.
The bus caravan stops by various places in the community where people knew Sateri, including Glacier Valley Elementary and Mendenhall River Community School, as well as his home. A small group of his neighbors waved to the buses from outside the Mountain View apartments where he lived. Friends say he is already dearly missed. In Juneau, I'm Pablo Rospeña.
This month's storm and landslides revealed that much of Haines, where there are no building codes, wasn't constructed with landslide risk in mind. About 50 families had to evacuate their homes. Another third of the town is still on evacuation warning. Experts say that as the climate changes, wetter weather means some homes will become unsafe. Claire Strempel reports for Alaska's Energy Desk.
The road down to Terry Bostable Podziki's property is lined with cars. There's a moving truck packed to the gills out front. She evacuated last week and has been staying at her ex-husband's place with about a dozen family members and eight dogs. On Tuesday, a group of geologists visited and didn't like the looks of new cracks in her walls and plaster. Then they thought the road shifted. She grabbed her family photos.
I really thought I was just going to take a trunk of photos out this morning, and I called my son and asked him to leave work for 10 minutes just to help load it with my son-in-law, and before I knew it, there were dozens of people here and a moving van and taking everything out of the house, and I'm so overwhelmed with gratitude.
Within an hour and a half, it looked like a moving crew had come through her Picture Point property. But it turns out the road didn't shift. This time. Bostable Podziki's home is in a zone below Mount Rapinski that geologists are calling the slump. It's an area of silt and clay that slides when it's inundated with water. And it slumped before. Earth movement shifted Lutak Road and damaged a home in 2012. The borough declared it a disaster. Engineers from Seattle recommended $1.6 million in drainage updates. But that never happened.
The mountains are beautiful, but they are also dangerous.
Ronald Donnan is a visiting geohydrologist for the state of Alaska. When he's not crunching mountainside data, he's driving around Haines in a Chevy Astro to measure water pressure, an indicator for mudslides. When it's high, it means there's pressure building underground, and that can lead to a slide.
What I see around town is a level of unpreparedness in terms of hydrological events. So a lot of development going on, people building houses where they think they want to live, which is fine. But all the construction, it seems, has clearly a lack of hydrological understanding of this environment.
That's not unique to Haines. Haines, like many rural areas in Alaska, does not have a building code. It doesn't have an up-to-date emergency mitigation plan either. Think of that plan as a map of potential hazards and a blueprint for how to respond. Donnan says that even though there are people who know things should be done better, there just isn't the money to support them. So even when planners and permitting bodies want to keep people safe, they don't have the resources to do it. Brad Ryan used to be the facilities director in Haines. He was around while the then borough planner tried to update that hazard mitigation plan.
It's a massive undertaking to understand what the hazards are when it comes to small communities in particular, where there's not a lot of resources. And obviously, we're in Southeast Alaska, there's not a lot of things that are developed. So every time you move into a new area, you have to think about another evaluation of the hazards in those areas. So it's money, it's people, and it's also that we're small relative to the areas surrounding us.
The consequences are real. Landslides aren't what people think of when considering climate change. It's usually sea level rise and hurricanes. But since the state declared a disaster in Southeast Alaska last week, Donnan says 20 communities in the region have asked him to do aerial surveys on mountains and steep terrain surrounding development. There's only so much prevention money can buy. And communities often resist building regulation. Even with updated and maintained culverts, a new hazard plan, and aerial surveys, there's no predicting nature. For the moment, blue sky reflects off of fresh snow on mountains surrounding Haines. But increased rain and storms, like last week's, are in the long-term forecast. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Claire Strempel.
I've just been handed the new update from the Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization. 41 new cases have been reported for the Kodiak Island Borough of COVID-19. One new case was tested on the 20th. Rather, two new cases were tested on the 20th, one travel-related, one close contact. 9 new cases were tested on the 11th, 15 new cases were tested on the 12th, and 15 more new cases were tested on the 14th. Sadly, one new death has been reported for the Kodiak community. This brings the current case count associated with the Kodiak Island Borough to 723. 207 cases are classified as active locally today. To date, there have been a total number of 31 local hospitalizations and 4 deaths associated with COVID-19. 6 patients are currently hospitalized in Kodiak, and 1 individual was transported off-island today for a higher level of care. As we move into the holiday season, take a moment to consider how you might modify your plans to help keep your friends, family, and fellow community members safe. Be mindful of the people included in your social bubble. Limit gatherings to only members of your household, if possible. Consider small, socially distanced outdoor gatherings, and please remember to wear a mask. In addition, the Department of Health is urging anyone who receives a positive test to notify their own close contacts as soon as possible so that individuals can quarantine without delay.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Cod makes a comeback in the Gulf, and fishing continues across the state. More after this.
Have fish in the freezer? Have it on the table in minutes with Azmi's new Cook It Frozen and hundreds of other recipes at wildalaskaseafood.com.
Pacific cod appears to be making a comeback in the Gulf of Alaska after getting clobbered by a multi-year heat wave starting in 2014 that wiped out several year classes. That shut down the fishery this year in federal waters of the Gulf from 300 to 200 miles offshore. But peacod is back on the fishing menu. The North Pacific Council last week set a Gulf-wide catch for next year at just over 38 million pounds and potentially more than 61 million pounds in 2022. For the state water fishery, the cod catch next year is nearly 14 million pounds compared to just 5.6 million this year. Cod took a 21% cut in the Bering Sea to 245 million pounds. Likewise, the Bering Sea pollock catch for next year was reduced by 3.5% to 3 billion pounds. Gulf pollock was cut by 2.4% to about 250 million pounds. Cod and pollock start Alaska's fishing year off in January. Southeast trawlers are out on the water now pulling up king salmon. Beam trawl and pot shrimping continues at the panhandle, along with diving for sea cucumbers and geoduck clams. Crabbing is ongoing in the Bering Sea for golden kings and tanners. Red king crab is about a wrap, and fishing for snow crab will get underway next month. The deadline for halibut regulatory proposals for next year is December 26th. The International Pacific Halibut Commission will meet virtually the week of January 25th. Finally, the deadline for fishermen to apply for trade relief is extended to January 15th. That's the program through USDA that pays extra poundage to make up for losses from ongoing trade disputes. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 14th day of December, the year 2020. The sun rose today at 9:49 a.m. It will set again at 4:22, giving us 6 hours and 33 minutes of daylight. Looking at our local district tides, we have a high tide coming up at 1:43 p.m. on the west side of 11.18 feet. Followed by a low tide at 8:37 p.m. of minus 2 feet, a significant low tide on the east side at 8:37 this evening. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a high tide coming up at 2:19 p.m. of 18.1 feet, and your next low tide will be at 9:02 p.m. of minus 3.7 feet, followed by a high tide at 3 a.m. of 16.2 feet. Current temperature, 35 degrees here in Kodiak, and we're looking for mostly clear skies tonight. A low around 28, west wind to 15 miles per hour, so maybe some meteor and northern lights opportunity tonight. For tomorrow, slight chance of snow between noon and 3 p.m., then a chance of rain, increasing clouds tomorrow with a high near 37. West wind to 5 miles per hour will turn to the south in the afternoon. For Wednesday night, snow is likely before midnight, then rain, low around 32 overnight on Wednesday. East wind to 15 miles per hour with gusts as high as 20. And on Thursday, we're looking for rain. High near 40 on Thursday, northeast wind to 15 miles per hour. Mariners, here is your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A trough of low pressure will linger over the North Gulf through Wednesday night. A 975 millibar low, 170 nautical miles southwest of Kodiak Island, will move on Wednesday night to 140 nautical miles southeast of Aleutian Peninsula Thursday morning. Your resulting weather. I'm looking for it. Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory through Wednesday. Northwest wind to 20 knots right now and seas to 11 feet. For tonight, look for west winds to 20 knots, seas coming down to 10 feet. And for tomorrow, southwest 15, seas to 8 feet on the east side. Over in the Shelikof on Kodiak's west side, variable winds to 10 knots today, becoming west 15, seas to 3 feet. For tonight, west wind to 20 knots and seas to 4 feet. For Wednesday, look for southwest wind to 15 knots, becoming southeast in Wednesday afternoon, seas to 4 feet in the Shelikof. For inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays, northwest wind to 10 knots will increase to 15 knots this afternoon, seas to 2 feet in Chiniac and Marmot Bays. For Wednesday, southwest wind to 10 knots could turn to the southeast tomorrow afternoon, seas remaining at 2 feet, building to 3 feet in Marmot Bay. The Light the Rock Holiday Home Tour is going on. With many holiday traditions on hold this year, the Alaska Whitefish Trawlers decided Kodiak families might need a little extra holiday cheer. So, starting on December 18th, you'll be able to take a self-guided tour of Kodiak's best holiday home lights and decor. They need your help, though. Please nominate your house or your neighbor, friend, or relative's house to be included in the tour. Families will be able to safely drive through town and then vote for their favorite houses. Cash prizes will be awarded for the top 5 houses. The deadline to nominate your house or neighbor's house is Thursday, December 17th, so that's coming right up this Thursday. Leave a message at 486-7062, that's 486-7062, or message the Alaska Whitefish Trawlers Association on Facebook. Also, the Harbor Lights Festival update. The Kodiak Maritime Museum will host the 2020 Kodiak Harbor Lights Festival from Friday, December 18th, that's this Friday, through Sunday, December 20th. As in previous years, boat owners are encouraged to decorate their vessels with lights to celebrate the holiday season, and prizes will be awarded to the top 3 decorated boats. Polling for best decorated boat will be conducted online this year. Due to COVID-19, there will be no reception at the Harbor Convention Center, so no hot chocolate. But the EOC is discouraging people from walking the harbor floats during the 3 nights on the festival unless they are masked and maintain a 6-foot social distance. For the first time in many years, there will also be a Harbor Lights Boat Parade. That's happening through Near Island Channel beginning at 6:30 p.m. on Saturday. KMM will award prizes for the top 3 photos of the Harbor Lights Festival boats. Photos must be posted on the KMM's Facebook or Instagram pages. That's the Kodiak Maritime Museum. With the hashtag Kodiak Harbor Lights to be considered for a prize. So go to the Kodiak Maritime Museum's Facebook page and check it out. Probably a great Facebook page anyway. For more information, check out the Facebook page, or you can give the museum a call at 486-0384. Due to close contact with COVID-19 amongst staff at the Kodiak Public Library, the library will be closed until next Monday, December 21st. Trivia will still be held Wednesday night, and next week's crafts sessions will be postponed until next Tuesday instead of Monday, and the supplies can be picked up next week rather than this week. We appreciate your understanding and wish all good health and to stay safe.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.